It's true. And I try to be very conscious of that, that this author is trusting me with their baby. And for a lot of authors, nobody else has seen it. I'm the first person who's seeing it. I work with a lot of authors on helping them determine which characters should really be telling this story.
Hello, and welcome to History Through Fiction, the podcast. I'm your host, Colin Mustful, and today I am thrilled to be joined by the executive editor of Historical Editorial, Jenny Quinlan.
You may find those critique partners, those beta readers, someone to blurb your book, someone who will hook you up with their editor or their formatter or their agent. And it's just great to make friends who love history and writing the same way that you do.
Jenny Quinlan, known as Jenny Q, is a dedicated editor and book coach with a focus on historical fiction and romance. Since founding Historical Editorial in 2011, she's edited nearly 400 manuscripts. With a BA in history and a copy editing certification, Jenny is deeply involved in the historical fiction community, contributing to the Historical Novel Society and chairing conferences. She enjoys travel, photography, and reading. Today, I'll be talking to her about all things related to being a historical fiction editor. So I'd like to start with your love of historical fiction. When did you first discover your love for the genre, and how did you turn this passion into a job?
So I was actually a child when I first discovered historical fiction, as I'm sure many of your listeners out there did. I was hooked on the Little House on the Prairie series by Laura Ingalls Wilder. I was just fascinated by how people lived so long ago. And then there were other historical novels like Where the Red Fern Grows, the Misty of Chincoteague books. Those really sort of got me started on it. But then as I, you know, got older and went through school, I was kind of only reading the books that were assigned to me by my teachers and professors. And then I went through a period of time where I was only reading nonfiction for a while. But there was one book I picked up that really brought me back into historical fiction, and that was The Other Boleyn Girl by Philippa Gregory. So once I read that, I was like, man, I really do love reading books set in the past. And so from there, I discovered Diana Gabaldon, Sharon K. Penman, and then I was off. And so ever since then, which was about 15 years ago, I pretty much exclusively read historical novels and all of its subgenres. Every once in a while, I'll pick up, you know, a book that's getting a lot of hype from a different genre. But really, historical novels are my love.
And of course, you've turned that into a job as the, I believe, the founder of Historical Editorial. Tell us, yes, what is Historical Editorial, and how has it grown since you started it?
Historical Editorial is a group of editors who focus purely on historical novels and all of their subgenres. So we're a group of editors who have a huge interest in history. A couple of us have degrees in history. I actually have a degree in history myself. So when the economy collapsed back in 2006, 2007, 2008, I was working for a daily newspaper. And of course, that industry pretty much tanked overnight. And I was sitting there thinking, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I thought, well, I want to get paid to read books all day, but who's going to pay me to do that? Well, I started doing a little research and I realized, oh, there are editors out there who actually do read books all day. And I had already developed a pretty good network within the historical fiction community via my book blog back in the days when, you know, we all had book blogs. So I took a course from the University of California, San Diego. It took me about a year and a half, and I learned how to formally copy edit. I was already pretty good at picking apart the elements of a book and doing developmental editing. So I just started from there. I put the word out to my network that I was opening up my editing business. I got my first few clients, and I've been so fortunate. I've been doing this full time for 12 years now. And I've been really fortunate to work with a lot of great people who tell all their friends about me. So I've kept pretty busy, and I actually got to the point where I was getting so many inquiries that I couldn't handle them myself. So I started looking to bring a couple of people on board to help me. And I've got a group working with me now who's really good. And as the inquiries come in, you know, we kind of decide, you know, who's the best fit for each project. So, you know, it's been great. I mean, I've been very, very blessed to be able to do what I love, to help authors make their stories better, for the past 12 years.
Well, that's a really incredible story. Just good for you for having that initiative, and it's so wonderful to see how it's grown. I'm curious, after working with so many authors, what are some common mistakes or maybe like learning opportunities you see from the authors you work with?
One of the biggest things I see, particularly with newer writers, is point of view. So I am a stickler for a tight point of view, no matter which style you're going with, whether you're doing, you know, third person multiple or first person. I'm really looking to make sure that that point of view is tight and focused. So a lot of newer authors don't really pay attention to what an important storytelling tool point of view can be. And that's easy to happen because you've got so many pieces to a novel, particularly a historical novel, when you're putting one together, that sometimes point of view kind of gets lost by the wayside. So I work with a lot of authors on helping them determine which characters should really be telling this story. How many do you actually need to have a viewpoint? And how can you get across other characters, you know, via a handful of viewpoint characters? So I would say point of view is one of the biggest issues that I see, particularly with newer writers, that we focus on when we're going through their manuscripts.
And I'm curious, maybe this would be helpful for newer writers to hear as well. You talked about having a background in copywriting, taking a course in that. Can you talk about the different types and levels of editing?
Yeah. So, you know, if you ask different people, you'll get different answers because there are different names for different editing processes. So what we do at Historical Editorial is developmental editing, which you may also sometimes hear called structural editing or content editing. But basically, that's where we're going to take your manuscript and really go through and look at your story. We're going to look at things like pacing, point of view, characterization, plot points, all of that kind of stuff, language, historical detail, and really help you pick that story apart and put it back together again to make sure you're telling the best story possible. And then we do copy editing, which is when we polish your final draft. When you have the story exactly where it needs to be, we come through and we clean up any typos, any grammatical errors, punctuation errors. But we also do what some people think of as line editing. And some publishers and editors treat this as a separate edit. They would do a developmental edit, then a line edit, then a copy edit. But we really roll line editing into both our developmental editing and our copy editing. So that's when we're also looking at the rhythm of your language, the structure of your sentences, making sure you don't have a bunch of repetitive sentence structures in a row, the flow of your paragraphs, word choice, things of that nature. And then also in a copy edit, we're also looking out for anachronisms, which can be objects or even words. So obviously we can't write using just the words that were around when our story is being told, particularly if it's, you know, several hundred to several thousand years in the past. So we just look for words that really stand out as being more modern, and we'll flag them and give the author the opportunity to determine if they still want to use them or if they want to replace them with something else. And we're also doing some historical fact checking. We don't do super deep dives, but we're looking to make sure your dates are correct, your names are correct, you know, that something you've got in the story belongs there in that time period, in that setting, things of that nature.
Sounds like very intricate work. So we've talked about the craft here and some of the technical aspects, but there's also a very important element, and that's a relationship between the editor and the author. And I think it can be difficult for authors who have worked for so many years on their project and that's so personal to them to then have somebody come in and tear it down a bit. So can you talk about how authors can work effectively with editors and have a good trusting relationship?
Yeah, well, you really kind of hit it on the head there because it's true. And I try to be very conscious of that, that this author is trusting me with their baby. And for a lot of authors, nobody else has seen it. I'm the first person who's seeing it. And so while I am very straightforward in my feedback, I really try to be aware of how I phrase things and try to always be very encouraging, even when I'm pointing out things that they may want to consider changing or pointing out ways in which they may be able to do something better. So I think it's important that you do have a good relationship with your editor, but you don't know whether you're going to have a good relationship with them until you work with them. So we always do a sample edit in the beginning, just to give our potential clients a chance to see how we work. And we do some communicating via email. And I also think it's really important for authors to work with editors who are well-versed in their genre. And that's why I really don't take on novels outside of the historical umbrella, because I'm not an expert in those, you know, like memoirs, horror, thrillers, things of that nature. Science fiction, I don't read them. So I don't feel like I'm the best editor to serve authors of those genres because I don't know what the market trends are in those genres. I don't know what the trends are as far as literary style goes, what's coming out, you know, what agents and editors are looking for. So I do think it's important for authors to try to find editors who work with their genre and who know the marketplace they're trying to break into. But, you know, the trust thing, you know, I try very hard to always be very conscious that, yes, they are entrusting me with their baby. And it's an honor for me to be selected to help an author take a project that they've been working on for months, years, to try to make it better. But it's also important for authors to keep an open mind when they make the decision to work with an editor and to be prepared that you may get some feedback that you weren't prepared for, and you may find some suggested revisions that were a lot more than you were anticipating. But that's when you work it through and you talk with your editor. So after we do a developmental edit, we have a conversation, either by phone or video, and we talk through the notes and we talk through ideas for moving forward. And I try to make sure that during that conversation, the author is feeling very good about the direction that they think they're going to go when they dive back into their manuscript. And then we're always there, you know, to talk through things afterward as they're going through the revision process. But with all that being said, not every author and editor are a great fit. Every once in a while, your personalities just don't mesh the way that you want them to. And that's okay. It just means that, you know, maybe next time you need to try somebody else. But you need to be aware of what your style is and what your communication style is and what you're looking for in an editor, you know, so that if you do have an experience that you feel wasn't super positive, you know what you want to do differently next time.
And speaking of finding that right relationship, there's also another element to this, and that's pricing. And I think for especially first-time authors, there can be a lot of sticker shock to the cost of a developmental edit. But then there's also so many different options out there as far as pay-per-word, pay-per-page, some that are like industry standard pricing, some that are much cheaper for one reason or another. Can you talk about pricing and how you price your edits?
So, you know, this is something that's always changing. And when I look at what some organizations, like, for example, editorial freelancers, what they're saying we should be charging, I laugh myself because there's no way. We're working with authors who often are working a full-time job. They're trying to make ends meet. They're also trying to work on a novel. They have dreams, but they don't have a ton of extra cash to spend. And so we try to be conscious of that. So it's a balance between asking for what we deserve for the value that we provide and the time that we spend on each project, and knowing that most of our clients aren't made of money and they have to budget out exactly what they can afford to spend, especially if we're talking about authors who are indie publishing, then they have many more expenses on top of just that developmental edit. So we try to be conscious of that. But at the same time, we do deserve to get paid for the value that we provide and the time that we put into the project. Now, we charge by the page. Some authors charge by the word. Some editors charge by the word, but you know, it all works out the same. You just have to figure out the math a little bit differently. And yes, there are some who charge a lot of money and there are some that don't charge a lot of money. So, you know, the author, I would say price should not be the number one factor when you're looking for an editor, although it definitely is something you have to take into consideration. But that's why we always recommend that when an author is looking for an editor, talk to several of them. You know, reach out to them, find out what they're charging, get sample edits, see who you feel is going to be the best fit, and go from there. But yeah, you will see pricing kind of all over the place because, you know, it's pretty much an open marketplace and editors are charging what they feel their time is worth.
So full disclosure, you and I have actually known each other for a number of years, and we worked together. You were my editor on a couple of my novels. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I told you this, but you're the reason I got an MFA. I learned so much from your editing. I realized that I needed to learn more about the craft elements of fiction, and that's why I went back to school and got an MFA, and what led me to actually starting this company, History Through Fiction. And then we finally got a chance to meet this past summer at the Historical Novel Society North American Conference, which you are chair of. So I was wondering, can you talk about your experience being the chair of this conference, what it is for authors that might want to attend in the future, and what some of the challenges were to run that amazing conference?
Well, we don't have enough time to go through all of the challenges it takes to put on that conference, but we'll talk about it. But first, I want to say that's amazing that you went and got your MFA, and I'm honored that I could inspire you in some way. But yes, I am serving my third and final term as the HNS North America Conference Chair. It's a great conference. You know, so many of us authors are introverts. And we spend so much time alone just by nature of what we're doing. But it's really important to get involved in the historical fiction community. It's really important to meet other authors who are going through what you're going through. You know, these are people who can help you down the road and who you can help in return. You may find those critique partners, those beta readers, someone to blurb your book, someone who will hook you up with their editor or their formatter or their agent. And it's just great to make friends who love history and writing the same way that you do. And the Historical Novel Society right now is the only conference that meets in person that is strictly dedicated to historical fiction. So it's just a really great time. And I would urge any author to attend. If you only attend one conference, make it the HNS conference. So we hold our North America conference every other year. We were in San Antonio this past June. We'll be in Vegas in 2025, June 26th to the 28th. And in the even-numbered years, the Historical Novel Society holds their conference in the UK. So they're going to be down in Devon in September of 2024. So you have choices. You can go to either one. But some of the challenges we faced, you know, it's a whole different game since COVID came along. We were supposed to have a conference in San Antonio in 2021. And we couldn't, so we had to switch to all virtual, which was a whole new thing. And then this past year, we attempted our first hybrid conference, which had its own set of challenges. So we're a very small group of organizers. The board consists of 8 members. So there are only 8 people who are doing all of the planning and organizing and on-site work for this conference. We do have a couple of coordinator positions who work with the board in the months leading up to the conference to help us with a few things. So the challenges that we've been facing post-COVID are, you know, figuring out what people are looking for, because we talk to other organizers and they're telling us they're not seeing the same attendance levels as they saw before COVID. We had a fantastic virtual conference, hugely well attended, but we didn't see that translate so much to the 2023 conference. So we think a lot of people are getting burned out on sitting in front of, you know, Zoom presentations all day. So we're kind of trying to figure out how to strike a balance between our in-person conference and a virtual audience. So those are sort of the main challenges we face. And also, costs have just been skyrocketing. So that's another challenge that we face, because we want to keep the conference affordable for people to attend, but yet we're faced with, especially in the technology, we've really been faced with a lot of rising costs there. So those are the main challenges that we face as we're planning the conference.
Well, I can tell you that I had a blast at the conference in San Antonio, and I would not miss the next one in Las Vegas for the world. And also, you talked about networking and kind of the value of getting writers out there, meeting in person. And so we have that in action with the San Antonio conference, because I actually met Jillian Forsberg at this conference. She's a historical novelist, a debut author. And she said, hey, I have this great manuscript. It's called The Rhino Keeper. This was in June at History Through Fiction. We didn't open for submissions until September. So I said, well, that sounds like a wonderful story. Please send it to us when we reopen for submissions. She did. I loved the story. I ended up signing her to a contract. And now we're publishing her novel, The Rhino Keeper. In addition to that, I don't know if you met Jillian at the conference, but then I was able to connect her with you thereafter, and now you're working with her on her second manuscript. And so here we have the three of us now all working together because of those connections we made at the conference.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I love serving on the board because I get to meet so many people. So I actually started working with the board way back in 2017 for the Portland conference. For 2017 in Portland and 2019 in National Harbor, Maryland, I served as the volunteer coordinator. So I wasn't on the board, but I served in one of those support roles we were talking about. And I got to meet so many people as the volunteer coordinator. And I will tell you this, if you're coming to the conference for the first time, or even if it's not your first time, sign up to volunteer, because you get to meet so many people that way. Particularly if you're a little shy, you know, and you feel kind of awkward going up to someone to say hello and introduce yourself. Well, when you're a volunteer, people are coming up to you. So, you know, you kind of get that obstacle right out of the way, and you get to meet a lot of your fellow volunteers, and you get to work with the board, and, you know, it's just a lot of fun. But serving on the board, particularly as chair, it was just so wonderful in San Antonio because so many people came up to me and introduced themselves. And I love that. I love getting to meet everybody. I love talking to them about what they're doing, you know, hearing what they feel about the conference. We had so many overwhelmingly positive comments about San Antonio. And we almost always do. Our conferences get really, really good feedback because we pay attention to that feedback. We listen to what people say. We put out surveys to find out what they feel about all the different elements of the conference. And we take that to heart when we're planning the next one. So we're always trying to make sure that we're providing the experience that our attendees say they want. And I also should point out really quickly that we're a nonprofit. So we are considered a charitable organization. We are a nonprofit. So, and we are funded almost solely by registration fees. So when you're attending one of our conferences, you know, that money is going to pay for the conference, and anything that's left over at the end of the run is going to pay for the next conference. So the board members are all volunteers. We don't get paid. We do it. It's a labor of love because we love the genre and we love the conference. So, you know, it's a special group. And when you have choices as to where you want to spend your money. And a lot of us are feeling the pinch and don't have as much extra money to throw around these days. So I think attending an HNS conference is great because you're also giving back to the community at the same time as you're attending the conference, as we are always giving back to the community when we plan these conferences.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely worth it. And yeah, volunteering is a great idea. I did some volunteering at the one in San Antonio and I really enjoyed it. So we've been talking business this whole time, but of course you love historical fiction. I love historical fiction. So what are you reading for pleasure, for leisure? Or do you have time to read any historical fiction for leisure?
I do, not a lot. this is the first year that I set my Goodreads challenge very low. I used to always try to read a book a week outside of work. I've had a hard time hitting that goal, and I hate not hitting my goals. So I've dialed it back a little bit this year because I have some personal goals that I want to work toward, and I'm going to have to give up a little bit of my precious reading time. But I really love more genre style fiction. So in my free time, I'm usually reading historical romances, historical mysteries. But I also have some authors, you know, who are my favorites and are autobuys for me. So if they've got those new books coming out, I'm grabbing them. I'm a big fan of dual timelines when they're done well. I read across all time periods. You know, I enjoy learning about, you know, places that I don't, and time periods that I don't know much about. So I will, you know, read, I don't limit myself via era. What I've really been enjoying lately are some of these mythological retellings that are being published. And I think it's great to see a resurgence in this subject. We've seen such a concentration on World War I, World War II, and now post-war fiction coming out. For me, reading post-war fiction is, I'll read a little bit of it, but I really prefer to read farther back in time. So I really enjoy a novel set during the Victorian era. I love Victorian mysteries, but I also love reading, you know, everything from ancient times, you know, all the way through English Civil War, American Civil War, American Revolution, French Revolution, all of that stuff. But I also love being introduced to cultures and time periods that I wasn't, you know, previously familiar with. So I read pretty widely, but I do stick pretty closely to historical novels.
And I read in your bio that you love to travel, especially to Europe, and that you're looking to visit all of Europe. So where are you at in your attempts to visit so much of Europe, and what are your future travel plans?
Well, I'm kind of grounded right now because I took a really big trip last year. I was able to spend 24 days in Italy. I had not been there before. So I was like, if I'm going, I'm going to see as much as I can. So I stayed in 6 different cities, and I was fortunate enough to have a couple of girlfriends join me for parts of my journey. So some of that I did on my own and some of that I did with girlfriends. We had a really great time. I've been fortunate enough to visit Paris and take a couple of day trips from there. And I've been to the UK a couple of times, in addition to London and a few day trips. You know, the UK conference was in Durham back in 2022, and I went to that. And I've been to Scotland and Wales. So I've done a lot of traveling over the past few years. And so I kind of have to chill out for a little bit, even though I have a gazillion more places that I want to go. Those are going to be a little bit farther down the road. This year and probably next year, I've got to focus on some other things. So, but I've had the chance to take some pretty amazing trips, and I really got the bug. I've traveled all over the U.S. I'm a big fan of American history. But once I finally got to Europe, I was like, oh man, there's so much to see here. I mean, it's a history lover's dream. So there are a lot of places I'd like to get to one day.
Well, I interviewed author Martez Fenech, and she writes about Malta, and she's from Malta. And yeah, now I just really want to go to Malta after hearing so much about it.
Yeah, I would like to get to Malta too.
Well, Jenny, where can authors connect with you if they want to work with you?
Well, the first thing I would suggest is that you go to one of my websites, historicaleditorial.com or historicalfictionbookcoach.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram, and start from there. There's a form on the site you can fill out, or you can just send me an email, and we'll just, you know, start having an opening conversation about where you're at and what you're looking for. I also just started, we're going to have our first meeting on January 31st. I've started what I'm calling my Uplift Crew, and it's a motivational social support group for writers. It's open to anybody. We're meeting on the last Wednesday of every month. It's free. You can find more information about it on my website. But this is a group for us to encourage each other, to talk about our goals, to talk about what's holding us back, to talk about figuring out how to find more time to write, how to be more productive. You know, it's really because I need some of that too myself. So I wanted to find a place where authors could get together, meet each other, make new friends, and really cheer each other on as we're going down this journey.
Well, that sounds incredibly valuable and important. So that's great. Well, Jenny, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been a blast to talk to you, and it's been very insightful, I'm sure, for a lot of authors out there.
Thank you so much for having me, Colin. I really appreciate it. what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I thought, well, I want to get paid to read books all day, but who's going to pay me to do that?